Hello, and welcome to Watch the Throne. What a lovely day. This is episode 26, Arrested Development, season 3, episodes 2 through 6 from 2005. I'm Mike Manzi.
And I'm Joey Lewandowski, and with us today to commemorate the special occasion of, you know, we've had TV shows, Mike, but we've rarely had, like, great TV shows that, like, an actor's appeared in. I mean, this is a little bit better than going great for Keanu Club, just a little bit. But to commemorate the special occasion of a cult classic, fan-favorite TV show, we have not one but two guests. And not only do we have two guests, but we have two guests that are also hosts here on the Cage Club Podcast Network. First up, we have co-host of the Winona Forever podcast, Lindsay Gibb. Hello, Lindsay.
Hi.
Thank you for being here to talk about Rita.
No problem.
Our delightful Rita. And also on the episode today, we have host of the and mastermind behind Now and Again, no longer just a solo host, now a co-host, Chris Podcast Mattiello. Hello, Chris.
Chris Corny Michael.
So I had seen all of Arrested Development before once, and I've seen a bunch of it more than once, but this is the first time I think I've ever seen this all in a row since the first time I watched it, and, like, it's amazing how much sticks with you and how good it all is, and even when the entire plot line is... I'm not sure if it's politically correct or not.
No.
But
definitely not.
But the show's not.
But the show's not. I was honestly surprised with my terrible, terrible memory how quickly I remember, like, basically from the first scene with Charlize, I was like, oh, right, Mr. F, mentally retarded female. Like, I knew, I can't believe that I remembered it, but when you watch a show like this, with that in mind, like, knowing what it is, you're really able to appreciate all the little details and see Charlize as basically a first grader in Charlize Theron's body.
I was thinking Sweet November a lot for several reasons, but yeah, I had
not... The hat, for one.
Yeah, the look, her look. I actually haven't watched an episode of Arrested Development since watching the end of season 4. I just hadn't gone back to it. I felt like I was done with it. But going back to it now, I can't believe how much I miss it, especially like the first episode that we watched. It's like one of my favorite episodes. Yeah. And I was just reminded of just how well everything had been sort of called back in that one episode. Yeah, this time around, I was like really excited to get back into it. And I ended up watching a couple extra episodes. I plan on going back to watch more. Like, I'm getting back into this show, thanks to Charlize.
I remember the Charlize storyline well going into this, but what struck me was how many other bits happened throughout it that have nothing to do with the Charlize storyline, but that were like classic moments in the whole series.
Mm-hmm.
Like the chicken dance in the first episode.
I think of Banner Michael. Banner Michael. That's in here a lot.
The Japanese investors is very good.
Tobias's business card, I think, is introduced in this.
Which is amazing, yeah. Like these, there's a lot of like just classic. I mean, I guess when you think about it, there are only probably what like 50 or 60 episodes in total in the original run. So it's not like, you know, we watched like a tenth of the series almost for this. So there's just statistically like room to have, you know, bits that people remember. And I think that, you know, everybody remembers Mr. F and For British Eyes Only, and just even if you don't really remember the context, you remember that little James Bond-esque Mr. F.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, and Dave Thomas, I remembered too, which was great. Fellow Canadian here for Lindsay.
Yep.
I thought of her being on this episode, so that was cool.
And I totally didn't pick it for that reason, but yes.
What year was this again? You might have said it.
2005.
Okay, so this is the second episode of a show for the Cage Club that I have recorded in this week that heavily centers around the word retarded, because we did on Now and Again.
Oh yes,
we did Let's Get It Started by the Black Eyed Peas in 2004, and talked about how the original version of that song was much worse, and how that word is, you know, fortunately on the way out. This one, fortunately, this word isn't used as like a hard R throughout, and at the time in 2004, as I mentioned on that episode, still the clinically viable, like medically viable term. But still like a little, you can't get away with that. If you bring that character back, because I saw she wants to come back for the fifth season for a cameo, can't bring that out anymore.
No.
Yeah. It plays much more edgier, I guess, nowadays than it did, because I think the show was just sort of known for being that way. Like, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is sort of before the heyday of stuff like Always Sunny in Philadelphia, which I feel like picked up a lot of the slack as far as sort of being politically incorrect show, or having these characters that don't have like you know, proper moral compass or anything. And also what helps this storyline a lot is that the narrator is kind of aware of how touchy the subject is at times, yeah, like that, you know? So, like, that helps a lot, too, is that the show is sort of right on the line, and it knows, yeah, that it's on the line, and it's trying to stay on the line.
It's not mean-spirited, really. It's not, like, laughing. It's not so much laughing at her and her disability as it is how stupid Michael is.
Right.
Yeah, he comes off much worse.
Well, that's him in general.
It's not really until the last of the five episodes that it's sort of known that she is mentally retarded and that they exaggerate it for comedic effect. Like, up to that point, it's still always kind of sort of maybe in a context that, like, oh, she's just painting with finger paints because that's a thing that teachers do or whatever. And if you know what it is, you know that that's not actually the case. But, like, up until that final episode where Michael knows, it's always like, oh, well, that could, I guess, be a normal thing that people do. Sure.
Yeah, she just seems eccentric the way, yes, she dresses, yeah, and stuff. Yeah. And she seems also like, maybe she's a spy, because that's what we're supposed to wonder about her. So I think, yeah, I've only ever watched this once before now, and so I'm sure I was just like, is she a spy, when I was watching it the first time? But this time, it's interesting to watch it with knowing what the twist is.
That first episode especially, they're really giving it to the Brits hard, too. You know, like, they do not hold back whatsoever. It's just a total, yeah, like, just take the piss out of them fest for that whole episode. So that could just, another thing, is like, this is what we think British people are like.
Right.
I wish I remembered the first time I watched this arc. If I knew, like, if I could see the twist coming, or if I, right, just thought she was doing, like, Arrested was doing, like, kind of a send-up of, like, the Manic Pixie Dream Girl character, which I think they still are doing.
Right. Yeah,
well,
yeah.
And also, which, totally, she's been throughout her entire career. Like, in, like, probably a third of her movies to date, she's been a Manic Pixie Dream Girl. So it fits in. Like, if you know her, it makes perfect,
yeah,
sense.
Yeah, and I'd also just like to quickly add, you know, get it out there. She's doing another accent. And if you watch her career, you hear her fake voice more than her real voice in film, yeah, and television. Like, she is speaking in accents, you know, at least 75% of the time.
Well, Chris, I think your point is sort of valid, though, because, like, I don't have the best memory for things that I've watched, and really from the opening scene, when I see her, I was like, oh, right, like, there's something, like, I remember there was more to it. It's obvious, but I guess it's sort of, you almost wonder if it's too obvious for the kind of humor that Arrested Development does, like, if there's another layer to it than what they're doing, but no, it's just the layer is Michael's just oblivious to her beauty, and isn't able to see, you know, the forest through the trees or whatever.
Yeah, I wrote down, watching this out of context makes you realize how awkward Michael is. Like, Michael...
Oh my god, yes.
It's just cringeworthy stuff.
Yeah, I remember the first time through, just maybe just because in contrast to the rest of the family, like, he seemed like the most normal one. You,
yeah,
know? But, like, he's totally not whatsoever.
No.
Like, he is just as bad as the rest of them.
I feel like I rooted for him through the original viewing of this. Maybe not all the way through into this season, but, like, I felt like I was always frustrated for him. Watching these, what, five episodes? I, yep, was just like, oh, Michael. I couldn't take him.
That's what's weird about TV shows is that, you know, another one of the hosts on our Cage Club podcast network, Kara Gail O'Regan of Wistful Thinking, has been rewatching Lost. And, like, the first time I watched Lost, I was like, oh, firmly in Jack's corner, I love Jack. And then I watch it again, I was just like, oh, Jack is terrible.
Yeah.
I'm on Team Locke. And then, like, oh, you go back again, you're like, no, they're both terrible. I don't like either. And so here, it's like, you know, you go through the first time, I'm like, Michael is the only, he's like the normal one, he's the, you know, the entry point for the audience, he's surrounded by all these, like, lunatics, and then here, you know, you realize that he's sort of causing more problems than anybody, like, it's just,
mm-hmm,
I think it's the mark of a good or at least an interesting show where you're like, or maybe not, I don't know, where it's just like, oh, these characters that I thought I loved and I thought I sided with, like, now I can't actually stand, like, it's such a weird,
yeah,
reversal, but you're absolutely right.
I think one thing the show in general did really well for me was just put me in Michael's shoes a lot, so I'm experiencing the world through his eyes. And I think this arc does a good job of sort of twisting that by saying we're sort of like seeing her, the Charlize character through Michael's eyes, and we're not sure like anything's even wrong with her. But then the show's like, oh no, you're looking at it like Michael's looking at it. So if you're looking at it like a normal person, you could probably piece it together a little bit quicker. But the show, I don't know, I at least felt like I was a little tricked by this arc too, and it, like, yeah, so like now I see him a little more clearly.
I have a question for the Watch the Throne hosts.
Go for it.
How often has Charlize Theron gotten to let go and just do comedy like this.
So, in one of my favorite movies to date so far in Watch the Throne, this movie Waking Up in Reno, it's sort of like a, not like a sex comedy, but like it's sort of a road trip sort of
It's a road trip
style.
Romp, yeah. Like relationship comedy on the road, kind of.
It's her, Patrick Swayze, Billy Bob Thornton, and Natasha Richardson, maybe? She is in full-blown comedy mode, and it's wonderful. Yeah. And that movie rubbed Mike the wrong way, and he didn't enjoy it the way that he could have, but that was definitely her going real out there, just embracing the comedy.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think what other movies she's really done comedy. What else has she done? Like, anything else? No, just that.
I mean, there's always sort of a flourish of or two in her performance where she's just like kind of going nuts or wild or cutting loose. I feel like she doesn't go like full blown cage or anything like that, but there's definitely moments in her performances where like she gets loud and starts yelling and it's like, all right, intense Charlize. And I can't really place, aside from like Sweet November,
I just looked at the list. I don't think there is another one.
There's not much. No, because this does show us, like, I think a much needed side of her, though. Like, she needs to do, I think, like that broad sort of a couple roles maybe that went to Cameron Diaz could have gone to her or something, you know, and like she could have really worked like a lot of those types of comedies a lot.
Well, what's also nice about this role is that it also sort of gives a precursor in a weird way to like Atomic Blonde. Like, she's sort of doing that, even though she's not really doing that at all.
She's doing a British accent.
Yeah, and I mean also being a spy, but not really a spy.
Right.
Yeah. I got you.
But so two things, Chris, in terms of like her evolution. So she was in Monster a couple movies ago, like maybe four or five or maybe six things ago by this point. And that was only like 2 years ago.
Right.
But since she did Monster, she was in another really sort of heavy drama called North Country, which she was also nominated for Best Actress. But she was also in the star of Aeon Flux, so she was like going full-blown action star.
Oh boy,
and
do I hate
also
that
in
movie.
This.
I've seen that piece of shit.
It's not very good. But
but it's not
like,
very
she's
bad.
Branching out, and I think she's like, okay, I sort of conquered prestige thing. Just like Cage did, I think, with like Leaving Las Vegas. Like Cage went from Leaving Las Vegas directly into The Rock, Con Air, and Face Off. So it's not as extreme as that. But it's sort of like, okay, I've done this, I can do it again, but like, let me see what else I can do.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's interesting. But I do think that in terms of what she's done before, what you were saying earlier is more apropos, I guess, in that she's been that manic pixie dream girl in a lot of movies, and that's sort of the closest she's been to comedy. And not like funny, but sort of in that free spirit, like wacky, zany kind of character.
It reminds me a lot of Jon Hamm. Where you look at him and he's been put into this role where it's just like, this is someone you either want to see like be like a brooding drunk, or like you want to kick some ass, or you want to fuck him. I feel like that's what they did with Charlize, except like men, I think, have more like leeway in their roles to be goofy. Women in comedy don't get to be like goofy and weird a lot. So she's just stuck doing like action or being a romantic lead. And that sucks because I think, much like Jon Hamm, every time he gets to cut loose in, you know, 30 Rock or Bridesmaids, he's like the best part of it. I think she would kill it if she was just able to go all out in comedy, because once it's like revealed who her character is in the hotel room and she just goes all out, it is you can see her having so much fun with it.
Yeah, her in the hotel room where she just goes, okay, night night, and falls on the bed.
Well, actually, you know, Mike, that reminds me, in Waking Up in Reno, she was jumping on a hotel room bed too, so I guess that's her trademark
her
comedy trait.
That's amazing. So whose British accent is better, hers or Dave Thomas?
Dave Thomas is killing it, to be quite honest. I mean, I don't even really know his real voice anymore. I always just know him from Bob and Doug McKenzie. Yeah. Like, that's all I ever hear from him. Check out Strange Brew. That movie's amazing. Mm-hmm. But I mean, she is a master. Charlize is, like, a master of accents. I mean, like I was saying before, like, more than using, she uses those more than her normal voice. And they might not be from the same district.
Yeah, they're not the same type.
No, but they're good for what, I think, for what they are.
We Britain is a real melting pot, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
There is that line in the Mr. F episode that she says something about, like, you can't cast Yanks as Brits in films because you can always tell. And that's, you know, you have two non-British people playing British people, and it's obvious to tell that they're not British, but it's also like, does it really matter? Because it's not like they're going for authenticity here. They're just going for, you know, they're not even in Britain. They're just in Wee Britain.
Right. in,
you know, California.
The
so it's just it's just wonderful. What I also do like, what I saw, and I apparently they do this like four times according to IMDb on the show. At one point, when he puts her down on that park bench, she's in front of the Wee Britain sign, and she sits up and just blocks out the it, so it's just Wee Brain, and it's like, oh. Huh. Right. So apparently they did that four times to, like, block letters to, like, give you, like, a little bit of a clue. Like, at one point, I think, when Buster maybe loses his hand, he's in front of an army officer sign, and then it's blocked and just says arm off. And so stuff like that where it's, like, these jokes on jokes, these layers in the jokes in the background. You know, I just love that that's there. But, I mean, I think it is important to note that we're not in Britain. We're just in Wee Britain, which is kind of great.
It's so hard to catch those little details when you have, like, Steve Holt showing up. And blah blah blah, and like all these other, like, what I feel are like iconic parts of the show at this point, you know. So, like, it's crazy how much they sneak in that gets past you, which just warrants rewatchability. So,
exactly, I think the rewatchability does come from the fact that the jokes are so layered, and with that much of a volume, you lose stuff, like, you don't remember everything. Yep. And that's awesome. I always say, like, I wish I could go back and let's, like, Eternal Sunshine it from my head so I could see it for the first time again. But there was so much that, even though I've probably seen this, I've gone and watched this arc before on its own instead of rewatching the whole series, but I've probably seen the whole series twice, maybe this arc four times. There's still stuff I forget. I laugh at really hard because it's such a deluge of jokes. You can't remember all of it. Like, I forgot that I needed in my life Dave Thomas and Charlize Theron reenacting a scene from Pretty Woman. And, like, I laughed so hard.
Well, what's also amazing, not only the rewatchability of Arrested Development, but if you've seen everything that Charlize has done, you know, there's the joke, the reference to Monster, which is amazing.
That
they say, you know, if you didn't want him to get married to her, you should have seen her a year ago before the plastic surgery. And they show her in her, you know, 30 pounds overweight or 30 pounds gained and her makeup effects for Monster. And she looks like a completely different person. And then what's also crazy, I saw this on IMDb. I didn't know this because I haven't seen that movie. But, you know, Mike, just a couple movies ago, we did The Life and Death of Peter Sellers. And at the end, apparently the entire plot of her being a mentally handicapped person and no one realizes is similar to the movie
Inspector
being there.
So. Oh,
and that movie apparently also ends with Peter Sellers walking away on water.
Mm-hmm.
So what's weird is that this movie that Charlize played Peter Sellers' wife in,
that's
or his second wife, or whatever.
One of his wives.
comes back just a few movies later, and it's like this sort of, I can't imagine that they knew that, but also, like, if they did, like, it's hard to tell with a show that's this smart, like, whether that was intentional for her or not, but it's just, it's kind of remarkable to me that, like, the Char-nections, if you will, that we have, the Theron-nections that we have here from one movie to the next, or one, you know, episode to the next.
I thought you were going to call out some kind of, like, Pink Panther reference I missed of it being just, like, a wacky mystery British kind of send-up, but that is much greater than I thought. I mean, being there is a fantastic movie, and I didn't even catch that at the end just because of how sort of, like, out of the blue it came. I was just like, oh, well, that is just, I don't know what's going on right now. So that's great. I love that.
You know, we will also get a return to the couple of Jason Bateman and Charlize Theron in another episode that Chris is going to do. They are married in Hancock. So sort of a redux of this relationship where she's also once again hiding a secret. Like, what is it about Jason Bateman that she always hiding things from him?
I used to watch him on TV on, like, this show Valerie or something, and then it became, like,
Valerie's
the Hogan
family. Hogan family and Valerie.
I don't know. And Teen Wolf 2. Like, when he reemerged, though, as an adult star, I never really got into the rest of his work. I like him in this show. I think he fits very well in this show, but I'm not that down with his film performances, so I don't know.
Well, one of my favorite movies of the year so far is Game Night, and he is perfect in that movie.
It'll change my mind. I haven't seen that yet.
He's sort of difficult to appreciate, I think, because he really has to play the straight man role, and, like, it's sort of a thankless role.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think without him in the world of either this movie or Game Night or even, like, the Horrible Bosses movies, you'd be inundated with 100% characters instead of real people, And you need someone like him to be like, hey, I'm not crazy. Everybody else might be crazy, but I'm not. So at least when, you know, when everything goes wrong, you can sort of, you know, see how I'm doing and sort of react like that or whatever.
His straight man bit in the chicken dancing scene is just one of the best.
God.
I was wondering, has Bateman and Patrick Wilson ever been in a movie together? I would love to see a movie where they were just like, they're like the two best, like, put upon husbands. Like, I would love to see them in a movie together where they were just sad sacks.
They were maybe in The Switch together. They were both in The Switch.
That was, wasn't that Ryan Reynolds? I thought that was Ryan.
No.
Him and Ryan Reynolds switch bodies, but
No, that's not that. This is about the sperm switching, I think.
Oh, geez. So
he wants to hold on. Let me make sure I get this right.
I thought that was Extract. No, just kidding. That's a whole other movie.
No, this is...
You're going to get him in Young Adults, I just realized.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
An unmarried 40-year-old woman, who's Jennifer Aniston, turns to a turkey baster in order to become pregnant. 7 years later, she reunites with her best friend, who has been living with a secret. He replaced her preferred sperm sample with his own. And that's Jason Bateman in that. Jeff Goldblum's in that. And Patrick Wilson's not the star. He looks like he's like 7th or 8th build. So he's in it. They're in it together.
So that movie ends 30 minutes in when she tells him that he swapped the sperm and they arrest the dude.
Yeah, right.
I saw that years ago and I was like, oh boy, like this is terrible. Yikes. So I don't remember anything about it, but
I regret
it. Who's the friend? Which guy plays the one who
Jason Bateman
sperm?
Does.
Oh.
Of course.
Oh.
Well, yeah, okay.
Yeah, of course he does.
I think I remembered him in Dodgeball, and I was like, that's what I want from Jason Bateman. He's just kind of unrecognizable, doing the wacky thing. But you're right, he is just typecast now as a lame straight dude, and maybe that's the problem.
Well, I don't know that he's lame. It's just the
Well,
type
not that
of,
he's
you know...
lame, but just, yeah, that every movie sort of needs that anchor to a degree, and he's good at it. He's working. He's better than most.
I want to go through, and I wanted to say some of Charlize's great lines, I think. I wrote down just a bunch of quotes from this. Michael goes to Wee Britain to see if he can find evidence that the British are messing with George Sr.'s, like George Bluth's trial? Is that what it is? Because we didn't watch anything before, like I sort of half-watched the previously on, and I was like, I kind of, like, it doesn't matter for what we're doing, but there's something like, he's going to find evidence to see if, like, the British people are messing
framing
with either like
him.
The home building or his trial. It's one or the other, I think, right?
I think George said that they were framing him, like, because he's claiming that he's innocent to Michael.
Okay.
I think that's what he was saying.
So Michael goes to Wee Britain to look for documents or whatever, some like records hall, and you need a British passport to do that, so that they need, so they're for British eyes only. And so he goes to the pub to see if he can find a British person to go back with, and he finds Charlize, who's the most beautiful woman he's ever seen. And he asks her, you know, are your eyes British? Because he doesn't know what to say around her because he's so, like, smitten by her. And she says, lucky for you, my whole face is British.
Nice one.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah, you know, Michael and women, coo-coo-coo-cha. you know, really quick, just on the chicken thing, like, I forgot about the whole thing with the Japanese investors also. And I've been going through, like, all the Godzilla movies over the last like couple months, and I totally forgot the whole like Godzilla send up part of this, and how each of the family members do like a Godzilla impression too, and it's like completely off. And
that's one of my favorite payoffs is George Michael flying in on the jetpack.
Yes.
She says, I'll make you blue, which is, I guess, sort of like a shout out to I just blew myself a little bit, right? Like, when she's covered in the blue finger paint.
Yeah, this show has a fetish with the color blue. Like, the series in general, just with all of the Blue Man Group stuff and everything.
Blue paint.
Oh, they go to that the only American restaurant in Wee Britain, and there's a 64-ounce cola to wash down your basket of donuts. So I like that little thing. That's also when we get the first banner, the Family Love Michael banner.
You know, the restaurant is one of the first moments where, as I was watching it, I was like, I must have known something was off with her, right? Or, like, is it just the because she's in the rocket ship car when he gets there? And I'm watching this. It's like, how do you not know? How do you not know that they're setting you up with this?
Because
she's just quirky.
Because she's a quirky,
it's
manic
so
pixie dream
good.
Girl, Chris. That's
it's
why,
so good.
You know?
And also, I guess he thinks she's just mad at him. So that's her, like, way of,
That happened several times.
Yeah.
I love it. And again, I think I also, at first for me too, I think as a viewer, the first time at least, I was like, oh, this is just how they're portraying British people.
Yeah.
Like they're just really hammering that home.
Well, I mean, also in the first episode, when her uncle comes up to Michael and he says, how would you like it if someone was going up to some stupid person in your family? And he uses stupid, like just like a sort of a, feels like it's just an any adjective there, like sort of like a, hey, a TV-14 show on Fox, like we can't say like any whatever person, but it actually, he does mean stupid.
They make a point of that with the term pussy, like, you know, how it's used differently over there and over here, and there it's a, I guess, I don't know if it's true, but the show states that it's more of a term of endearment there, where here it's more of an insult, and so they beep it, and Ron Howard, as the narrator's like, I really wish we didn't have to beep that, or like, I don't understand why we're beeping that or something.
I can't believe we had to bleep that. It would have been such a nice moment.
Yeah.
So I think they're also setting that up. They're setting that joke up like more than once, and then they're using that guy as a character to be like, oh yeah, just the whole idea of miscommunication, not only because Michael is a narcissist and can't, you know, see past like what he wants or anything, but just also the cultural differences that the show is portraying.
The bleeping of pussy, obviously it's part of the storyline, so I don't know if it actually had to happen or if they just needed to do it to be able to say, you know, too bad we had to bleep that. But like, I do wonder if you would bleep it now with all of the like bringing back of the term pussy now. I don't know.
The stupid thing that you mentioned, they do set this arc up at either at the end of the previous episode or the beginning of this episode, where George Michael and Michael are talking. They're like, we need to have some father-son time. And George and Michael's like, yeah, I've got a stupid girl problem. And then Michael says something. He's like, no, the girl isn't stupid. The problem is stupid.
Yeah,
so they really do kind of set up that we're going to get the stupid girl problem. But like, you don't, again, Arrested, really worth rewatching, because you don't pick up on that until the second time through.
Well, there also is, in these five episodes, we get a real sort of head-to-head that they never really confront each other, but it's George Michael against Steve Holt vying for maybe his affection, even though nobody really knows what they want in that relationship, and they're all cousins. And then we find out that Charlize, her parents were cousins, and that's why, you know, she was born the way that she was. And so it's like this whole, like, if this one thing in the show leads to another, like, you know, it's just, it's all these like interconnecting stories that don't really connect, but sort of do in those like weird behind the scenes ways.
Yeah, that's a great parallel, actually. I didn't even pick up on that until you said it, the idea that, yeah, the cousins, the Bluth cousins want to bang, but like if they do, they're going to end up with a character like the one Charlize is portraying. So it's like they're seeing sort of the consequences, and the idea that Michael doesn't see them is just even more hilarious in my eyes. So, but that's really cool. Yeah, that's, this show is just super fucking clever. I mean, that's what it comes down to.
Yeah. Before I go on, I do want to say, like, I think, and Mike, you're gonna have to help me out here, I think every episode here is named after a Bond movie, right?
No, I'm not sure of all the episodes.
So the first
titles.
Episode is for British Eyes Only, so it's For Your Eyes Only, right? Then there's Forget Me Now. Is there one called Forget Me Not?
No. Good try.
But
not
no.
A pussy is Octopussy. Yeah.
Ocean Walker is maybe kind Moonraker. Of like Moonraker, kind of.
There's also there's another on under. There's a lot of underwater stuff. Mr. F is like Dr. No.
Yeah, I figured that. Yeah, I've always kind of seen that.
So
yeah,
it's close.
I mean, they're clearly doing like a spy send up kind of thing, but I don't think Forget Me Now would be anything. Though, is this the first appearance of Forget Me Nows, which will come back a lot in season 4?
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I don't know. Maybe, which they just turn out to be roofies. I mean, there's also the oxy-incontinence, which are just the oxy-cons.
Right. Oh, yeah. I forgot about that.
There's also the joke at the end of the first episode, at the end of For British Eyes Only, there's a couple, at least one episode, if not more, that end with the James Bond sort of pinwheel circle, like circling in on part of the screen, but at the end it just says Michael Bluth will return in Forget Me Now. So they're definitely playing on that James Bond trope, that spy, that secret agent, even though he is not at all the secret agent in the story.
No, it's Tobias, right? At one point.
Like, he is the mole.
He's Mr. F.
He is Mr. F. I also do want to mention, this is really weird timing in that we are recording today. I don't know if any of you saw, but Mitchell Hurwitz just announced on Twitter today that he remixed season 4 entirely and recut it into 22-minute episodes. So we went from like 10 episodes or whatever to like 15 or 17 or something. And so instead of focusing each episode on a character, he sort of recut it in the way that the original 3 series were cut. And he made a joke about how he just wants to make it for syndication. But I think it's a really weird experiment, Mike, and almost sort of something that like Soderbergh would do.
Yeah.
Where he takes like 8 hours of footage or whatever and just recuts it because he can. And then makes new jokes out of things and completely changes the narrative and the story and all that sort of stuff. So that's crazy. But then he also announced that season 5 is not only happening, but it's also coming soon, he says. So it was a big day for Arrested Development fans as we're recording this a couple weeks before it comes out.
So will the recut of season 4 be more like chronological or something? I wonder.
I think so. I think it even said in the article. I mean, I know that's something that fans were clamoring for a week after season 4 was released. They're like, totally. someone recut this.
Like, on the day where they all, like, stayed up overnight to, like, watch every episode.
Yeah.
Like, oh.
Like, I think there's some really great stuff, like the Getaway song, Stay Away, Getaway. Like, I love that stuff with Job and everything. Like, there's some really great moments in it. But, yeah, the structure of that was unexpectedly jarring and kind of like took a while to get used to.
Totally. And that season 4 recut is available this Friday, so as you're listening to this, it's already out. So yeah, so it's, you know, it's gonna be on Netflix this Friday. So
wow, that's fast.
The banana stand is open for business.
At the beginning of Not a Pussy, we get one of the best lines I think Charlize has ever said in her career up to this point. It's the voicemail message that she leaves for Michael. She says, "This is Rita. I just want to say hi. I'm on my way to the train station. Bye-bye." And then that episode ends with her stomping through kiddie pools at the church and state fair.
Yeah. I love the church and state fair.
It was nice to get a brief appearance of Anne, because I always love when she shows up in this show. She's low-key one of my favorite characters.
Her?
And that's Anne, too. Like, that's the second actress. I don't know if did you know that? Yeah, that was like a big joke, is that as a character, people didn't even realize 2 actors played her at one point. Because, you know, just the nature of her character.
Really?
That's true, Mike. That's true, Chris.
Holy
shit. Yeah. So, I don't know when they switched, but somewhere.
I think either season 1 or season 2. I think it was pretty early on, relatively speaking.
The one we saw was the one. This was This is Mae Whitman.
Yeah. This is the daughter from.
Okay, this is the future battle in Scott Pilgrim.
Oh, no kidding. Oh, okay.
Right? That's.
I know the other one went on to do like a Battlestar Galactica show, like the one after the good one. I don't know. It was like a
I'm not wrong that Mae Whitman is one of the evil exes in Scott Pilgrim, right?
She's Roxy Richter.
Yeah, okay.
And we also get obviously Michael Cera in that too.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
She was in 16 episodes. So she was in 3 from the new series. I think the series. She was definitely the second one.
Huh.
The first episode she was in was the one where they build the house, which was season 2, episode 2. So basically the first season had one Anne, and then from then on was this Anne.
Wow. I'll have to watch for that next time I do a rewatch, which may never happen, but because who has time to watch 4 seasons of a TV show anymore.
But this show, I was surprised, this show flies by.
It really
like
does.
This show is kind of a breeze compared to other shows.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what, like, Lindsay was saying. She's like, I don't know if I have enough time to watch all 5 episodes. Not to put you on blast, Lindsay. I was like,
it's
shorter than a movie. You know, if you think about it, it's under 2 hours to watch all 5. And I mean, you sort of still have, if you're in medical school, for instance, wink, wink, you might have to set aside time to do this, but it's not like it's more time consuming than just watching a random ass Charlize movie for the most part.
And probably more rewarding. Based on your lists of those movies I've seen.
Oh my god.
I think also my memory of this, it felt like it was longer, like it was more episodes.
Gotcha.
So I thought, do I have to watch a whole season? Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of thought so too. And then I was expecting to watch a couple more. And I think, like I told you, I watched the next one and just her photo appears in the next, in the episode 7, I guess, or whatever it is. And then there's one in here where she's kind of hardly in it, I feel. Yeah, there was just, I guess, less than I remembered. I don't know. My memory for the show was not that great, which is okay because then all the jokes are new again.
Now, in Mr. F, Charlize plays the banjo. Is that actually her playing the banjo?
I don't know, but
probably
I love that she's
not
supposed to have, what, like a 6-year-old's intelligence, but she's like amazing
first grader,
at banjo.
Yes.
She really was.
I guess that's sort of more of like a Rain Man.
She only knew one song. He says it. Like, do you know any other songs? She's got yeah. that one down really well.
And it's also at the end of that episode, which is the fourth of the five, where the family finds out because the uncle shows up. Charlize's uncle shows up to Lucille's apartment and says, you know, she's mentally retarded. One of them says, that explains what she's doing with him. And somebody else says, and the hats. And I feel like that's sort of a dig at, like, the Manic Pixie Dream Girl, at the Sweet November character. Like, why are these quirky girls always wearing hats? Like, what is going on? It's like, there must be something wrong with them. Like, that felt to me like sort of like a takedown of, like, either film or just a certain aesthetic, or I don't know, like, more than just the character, more than just Michael being dumb, felt like a bigger takedown of, like, that type of character.
The raccoon hat that she was wearing was one of the things that made her seem like a spy when she
yes.
asked him, like, tell me more about your family or whatever she asked, and then, like, pointed the tail at him like it was a microphone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was under the impression at one point we were supposed to believe that there were recording devices sort of planted on her, and that's why she yeah. has, like, the crazy backpacks yeah. and all the extra, you know, flair and everything happening.
But then it's in that fifth episode, The Ocean Walker, where now we as the audience know for sure that she is mentally retarded. I feel like I keep saying that because I don't know how to say it, like, politically correct. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know, like, what's the right way to say it? Is that the right way to say it?
Intellectually disabled would be how the books use it these days.
Okay. It's in that fifth episode when we find out that she's intellectually disabled. She really is able to embrace that, like, true comedy gene. It's very politically incorrect, as we were saying earlier, in that, like, now we see her being, like, this, like, wacky, you know, first-grade intelligence kind of character. But it also feels like she is that Manic Pixie Dream Girl that we've been talking about, where they're talking about, you know, instead of making houses, maybe you should make land on the ocean. There's no land on the ocean. And it's these, like, crazy ideas. It's this different type of Charlize that is just wonderful to see, that she's really leaning into the zaniness.
Honestly, all I could think of was Natalie Portman in Garden State. Oh. I think it's like, when I feel down, gosh, I just do something that nobody's ever done before. Blah, 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 blah. I was like,
she's also disabled in that movie, right? Her character has some kind of, like, she gets seizures or something.
And she has to wear helmets all the time, and that's her quirk thing.
Yeah, I feel like this show is very self-aware in that I think it's also trying to tear down the whole Manic Pixie Dream Girl
sort of
thing, you know, and I think that's a good thing as well. And I think it's saying to men in this episode, like, look, like, that's not an ideal. Like, it's not something people are gonna go, I don't feel like people should go out of their way to act like that to please people either. So I don't know, this, yeah, a lot of it's really using comedy to confront a lot of issues here.
It's also using comedy to really take down British slang when Michael's like, you know, she just says things differently, you know, like a go up box instead of the elevator.
Yeah. Go up box.
I also love, I think it's around episode 5 or maybe it's in the 6th one, but how Lindsay, like, just really takes to Charlize's character and, like, starts dressing like her. And uh-huh.
Yeah, it's in
like
episode
her.
6 where they start wearing their clothes inside out because, yeah, you know, that's how you see the labels. And also the label doesn't tickle your neck.
Right, yeah.
I one of my favorite, I guess it's kind of a throwaway gag, but when Dave Thomas goes, that's it, I'm putting the invisible locks on the door. Lock, lock, lock. Gets me every time.
And then, like, it comes back later because Michael's on the other side of the door and Charlize is like, I can't go out. Like, there's half the locks that I can't even see.
Yeah.
He doesn't question it. Like, he doesn't say, like, what?
And then she opens the door and says, be careful, when he runs away.
We also get at the end there when the uncle says to the family, you know, that she's mentally challenged, but she's also has millions to inherit. George Sr. and Lucille both say millions. Buster says mentally challenged.
Yeah.
And Lucille says, shush, shush, not polite. Like, yeah, like that's, we don't talk about that. Like, that's, like, suddenly, like, they're, like, if there's the higher ground here, because it really shows, like, the true villainy of who they actually are.
Right.
Absolutely.
I can't believe we even get George's brother. What's his name again? Like, he even shows up and gets thrown
Oscar
in jail for Oscar.
Okay. Oh,
yeah,
right.
Yeah. So, like, I can't believe we even get Oscar to show up here. Like, so much happens during this, like, couple episodes. It's just great.
We also get an Anyang return too.
Yes.
Oh my god, that's right, that's right. Wow.
And the surrogate for George Sr., why can't I think of his name right now? Super Dave Osborne.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was amazing.
What I do like is that the promise of a tiny teddy is enough to make Michael think that Charlize eating plastic fruit is maybe, you know, not a red flag.
Right.
She really liked the grapes.
Yeah, that was my favorite too. Yep, she really liked
And the
those.
Last thing I have is that we also get a second banner. We have Michael, I love Mary.
Oh, gosh.
The only other little bit of trivia that I found on IMDb, which I didn't realize, is that Rita is just the middle part of Britain. Like, it's just... That's
wow.
just her name. She's that British.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Huh.
Anybody else have any notes before we get on to the game portion of our program?
Well, not to be annoying with my Canadian stuff, but you mentioned Dave Thomas, but Michael Cera is from my hometown, Brampton,
wow.
Ontario. Yep.
Wally.
He's like almost 10 years younger than me, so I didn't know him or know anyone who knew him, but he used to come to the mall all the time there, and I had lots of friends who worked at that mall, so everybody has their picture with Michael Cera.
Is there like a street named after him?
No, I can definitively say no.
Well, that seems like a missed opportunity.
Yeah, well.
Then I'm guessing there's no bronze statue.
I don't think so.
I don't even know what that would be.
Oh, like a little bronze statue of a little boy holding a disembodied hand? Well, I like that. Chris, any other notes that you have about these five episodes of Arrested Development?
I did take a note, but it's just a hand with a frowny face on it, so I don't really know what that means. That's honestly, I forgot. That's another joke that I forgot about when she leaves the
it
note.
It means she's gone to marry him.
Yeah. Oh, that's true.
I just, another one that I just forgot and made me laugh really hard. That and Hot Potato. Didn't remember them.
Oh, my God.
But really got me.
Hot potato.
I sing that song all the time. Whenever somebody mentions the Wiggles, I'm like, hot potato, hot potato.
Joey, there's actually a Keanu connection in one of these episodes. Andy Griffith is mentioned. And Keanu once played his son in a made-for-TV movie about alcoholism.
That's true. And also, Ron Howard is the narrator here, so that's another direct connection.
But we haven't done the Ron Howard podcast. We did.
Very true. And we never will, because it will never, ever end, because he has done so many things in his career.
Since we're talking about timely things, and Dave Thomas was in this, the SCTV reunion is in like 2 weeks Toronto. I'm sadly at the Toronto Comic Arts Festival, so I can't. So I didn't even try to buy tickets, though. Who knows? It might have been very hard, but I have lots of friends who are going. Sad.
I'm truly sorry for your loss.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you.
Mike, any other notes about the five episodes that we watched?
No, I'm tapped out.
Well, didn't want to tip my hand too early, but, Mike, we have an email.
Get out. I think that's our first email.
Whoa.
It is our first email. We do have another spam email that I got rid of, but this is an actual email.
Well, it was the spam from the print. Prince or whoever?
Prink Harry? No, it wasn't.
Prink Harry?
It wasn't
Prince Harry. Instead of Prince Harry?
This is subject line, hi from Italy and about Watch the Throne. So we have expanded overseas.
Awesome.
New listener, Angelica Frattini.
Sweet.
Angelica says, hi guys. I listen to your podcast, Watch the Throne. I think it's really fun. About the last episode, I want to tell you two things. Which the last episode, that right before she emailed, was Head in the Clouds. We got this email over the weekend, I think. So we're a couple weeks ahead recording. So this episode's going to come out in like 3 weeks. So we are going to... So eventually, Angelica, you will hear this. We did not wait to read this. We are reading it as soon as we can. So it's not that we don't love you for writing in. Thank you for writing in.
If you
want to write in, you can write in watch@cageclub.me. Just let us know what you think. But Angelica, thank you for writing in. She says... About the last episode, I want to tell you two things. Number one, I completely agree with you about the movie Head in the Clouds. So happy someone can read my mind, LOL. Neither of us, none of us really liked that movie, so.
Yeah, I forgot I watched it. I'm sorry, but I did. I remember when you posted like the episode, I was like, what? Wait, what?
She says, number two, do you really not know who Stuart Townsend is? He was Charlize Theron's boyfriend, Mike.
Oh,
this terrible, terrible actor who is in
Get
Trapped.
Out of here.
Wait, isn't he Bad Lestat from Queen of the Damned as well?
No way. Oh, my God.
Yes.
Man.
So he is this guy.
He's also
He was in the movie called Trapped.
Leaf Extraordinary Gentleman, I think he's in.
Oh,
yes,
my God.
He
plays Dorian Gray?
Yeah. Oh, also, he has my
God. My mind is melting right now.
He has my birthday. He's 15 years older than me. But this is a guy, Chris, that we saw in a movie called Trapped. And Mike was like, I can't believe how terrible of an actor this guy is. And then we watched Head in the Clouds. I was like, Mike, you're not going to believe it. The lead actor in this, the same as in that movie. He's like, I was thinking the whole movie. He's like, I can't believe how terrible this guy is. And it's like, this guy just drives Mike crazy.
I can't recognize him, but I'm always like, this is the worst actor I've ever seen in my life. It tops the guy from the last time. And I was like, oh, it's the same guy.
So Angelica says they met on the set of Trapped and split after a long-term relationship almost 10 years. So, wow.
Interesting. He wasn't by any chance in Aeon Flux, too, was he? Because she says something in the audio commentary
Hold on. Next sentence from Angelica. Anyway, you both wondered why he's in this movie. Maybe this will explain it. She writes in parentheses, and he also has a small cameo in Aeon Flux. Guess which one? The kiss scene, clearly.
Got it. Okay.
She says, okay, I know this is sort of gossip. Sorry for that.
No, gossip. I didn't recognize him in that either. I was like, that's a horrible kiss. No.
I just like to say I'm incredibly embarrassed I could pull out two Stuart. I don't even know his name, but Stuart Townsend. But like once you said it, I had all these memories of him just being long-haired and terrible in those two movies, and it came rushing back to me. I think I had like a mild stroke or something.
She says, "Thank you again for your hard work. You always make me spend a nice time listening to your podcast, even when I don't agree with you, but not this time. Ciao, Angelica." Well, thank you, Angelica, for writing in. You are wonderful. If anybody else wants to write in, you can have an email address, watch@cageclub.me. I think Mike and I are going to spread out a couple of recordings and sort of start recording closer to the release date. So if you write in, there should be less of a gap between when you write in and when we read it. So please write in, say hi, hit us with more trivia, hit us with more gossip. I mean, if you consider that gossip, you probably do not want to listen to Magic Mike's or Boyfriend Material, where it's like straight up 100% gossip, basically. Delightful podcast, though. Go check those out.
And right back, let us know what opinions you disagreed with us on. I'd love to hear some of those, too. That'd be great, because as it is, you're our only feedback right now.
Specifically,
so keep it coming.
I want to know, Angelica, if you have watched Waking Up in Reno, and what you think of Waking Up in Reno.
Do you think she's from Italy, or like Wee Italy?
Just like Little Italy. So our newest game on the show, the third game that we've rolled out here, is we are linking cinematically 5 episodes of Watch the Throne. We understand that you guys have not seen all of her movies, so we are going to randomly pick 4 different things that she's been in, plus Arrested Development, and link her characters or her stories or the worlds from one to another. It sounds difficult, it sounds complicated, but it's actually kind of easy and kind of fun. As long as you have the mentality of there can always be like evil sisters, like, you know, twins, or characters have babies off screen that you don't see, and then those babies have babies and there's suddenly a grandma and you're suddenly like 50 years later in the future. Whatever you want to link, however you want to link these stories, we're going to link 5 things she's done in a game that does not have a name.
I understood all of the words you said, but in that order, it's like when someone tries to explain Game of Thrones to me, I just hear them, and I'm like, I didn't understand any of that English.
You'll pick it up real quick.
Okay, so the first one we're doing, have either of you seen the movie The Yards?
No.
Have you heard of The Yards? No. I mean, it's a minor masterpiece. I'm like, every time we mention it, I'm getting closer to agreeing with Joey about that.
The first one we're going to do, I'm sure you've both seen this, The Devil's Advocate. I know Lindsay has because Keanu, her new crush, Keanu Reeves, is in it. Have you guys both seen Devil's Advocate?
I have not seen it.
What? Whoa, revelation.
Wow. Because you've seen it, right?
I've seen a lot of Keanu.
So we're going to link The Devil's Advocate. So that's going to be one.
Okay. That's sort of a mainstay.
The Italian Job.
Okay. I don't think I've ever seen that.
It's a car chase movie, I know that.
Yeah, I know that too. Yeah.
Oh, you guys are difficult to play this game with. Monster.
Okay.
Yeah, I've seen it.
Okay, Monster.
And I don't think either of you ever seen this. Have you ever seen 2 Days in the Valley?
No.
No.
All right, new one.
We could roll again.
Nope, not Hollywood Confidential.
Not really a movie.
Have either of you seen North Country?
Dog, I don't think I've seen another Charlize Theron movie before this.
That Thing You Do?
Okay, yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay, everyone's. Here we go.
Mike, I feel like our fear is coming realized in that the movies that most people have seen of hers are That Thing You Do, The Devil's Advocate, The Italian Job, maybe Reindeer Games. It's just like these like weird, random, selective movies, whatever. But anyway.
It's okay. I mean, this only has to last a few more episodes, so we're good.
Yeah. I also enjoy it. I like doing it. We are now going to link the stories or the worlds of That Thing You Do, The Devil's Advocate, The Italian Job, Monster, and Arrested Development. So my first connection between these is, in The Devil's Advocate, a lot of talk about Italy, a lot of talk about Italian themes, a lot of talk about the devil, a lot of Italian language being spoken. They are pulling the ultimate Italian job. How do you like that, Mike?
I don't know. That's very... I don't know if I could wrap my head around that.
It's out there.
That's high concept.
Well, thank you.
Wow.
I would say
you just took it to another level.
Perhaps the ultimate Italian job is being a mafia don, much like Al Pacino was. Another movie that wasn't The Devil's Advocate, but he was also in. I don't understand this game.
I can't keep track of what movies we're talking about. Okay, The Devil's Advocate.
I feel like I need to make like a red yarn and pictures thing on my wall to get this to work.
Just for an example, if we were going to link Monster with Arrested Development, the idea would be that the actual girl from Monster actually got plastic surgery, moved to Britain,
right?
You know, became super wealthy.
Yes. Okay, and so this isn't like a 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon thing. We're not taking actors.
No,
or,
that's what I was trying to do.
You're making it up.
Oh,
it's more of like creating a shared universe between the
so
stories.
It's like Charlize Theron D&D right here that we're doing.
Sure, whatever helps your nerd brain wrap
just
around.
Just role playing some ideas about Charlize. Okay, I don't think I'm gonna be very good at this game.
This is the biggest bummer of an epic. Everybody, literally every other guest has loved this game.
I heard you do a game where you were like making up the sequel to something, and I was like, oh god, I hope they never make me play that game.
Oh yeah,
we did the pitch a sequel game, but we didn't get exhausted by that.
Oh my gosh.
So yeah, so Mike, so her character in Monster goes to Britain, goes to Wee Britain, gets plastic surgery out in Hollywood, whatever, becomes this Charlize. So that's a connection between those two. I do like, just because the Italian, like, you know, Italian Job and Devil's Advocate, they are pulling the ultimate Italian Job. It's just, it's a link in name alone. So we need to link the high-powered law firm in New York City to Wee Britain in California, and also link that back in time to That Thing You Do somehow. Mike, do you have any ideas?
What if Bob Loblaw went to law school with
Keanu? Oh, perfect. Oh,
see,
now,
see, you're getting it, Chris.
Okay. That's good. Now you're talking. Good.
Connection complete. There you go. And I could see that, too.
Have we connected That Thing You Do?
No, That Thing You Do is... So Mike did one last time that was nice, and they just heard the song on the radio, and that was cool.
That was sort of like an act of desperation.
No, but it was a unique take, because I feel like that's one of the movies that everybody has seen, so it's always in the game. We're always linking it. Trying to think, what other kinds of connections could we tie between these worlds and that world?
We've got That Thing You Do and the Italian Job left.
Well, no, the Italian Job is just linked to...
Okay.
We're not actually linking the Italian Job. I'm just saying that the devil is pulling the ultimate Italian Job in New York.
I don't think we ever meet Charlize's parents in that movie, if I'm not mistaken. So technically, her dad could be the guy who died in the beginning of the Italian Job. They're pulling the job and then...
Is the Italian Job the movie with all the minis in it?
Yep.
It is. Yep. I could picture a mini driving through Wee Britain.
Oh, yes.
There you
there
go.
We go.
Well, there's also, you know, the Italian Job does take place in L.A., so maybe at one point, it just races through the streets.
There you go.
I would love to see a plane stair cart in a car chase, just saying. I think you do a lot of stuff with that.
Weirdly, not really weirdly, but in Captain America Civil War, there is the stair car in the airport battle scene. So the stair car is there, so that's great. And then apparently, sort of a spoiler maybe, but not at all a spoiler, for Infinity War, there is a quick cut and a cardboard cutout maybe? Or no, maybe it's a person dressed like Tobias, like in blue, is in Infinity War. Hmm. So.
Yeah, in the collector's collection, there's a... There's a never nude blue Tobias Funky in one of the jars.
Which is pretty amazing. So, okay, so that was that. So that game sort of tanked real hard here, but...
Sorry.
I do like where we wound up, but I do like the connection between Al Pacino and Bob Loblaw, because that's terrific.
Yeah, that's good.
And also, you know, the minis driving through the streets, and also we actually get Monster becoming Rita. So that's pretty cool.
Close enough. Still fun.
I still enjoyed it. So the only other thing we have to do is to nominate this episode, these episodes, for the Watch the Throne Awards. Mm-hmm. Best Charlize. Do we want to nominate for best or worst role? Or most badass role? Which I don't think it's that.
Probably
but
not that one.
Best or worst? Or is it not really on par, Mike, with necessarily like Monster or Waking Up in Reno or North Country or Devil's Advocate?
I think what's unique about it is what Chris kind of brought up very early on is that we haven't really seen a Charlize like this a lot, like the comedy role, like the comedy Charlize. Like, I feel like she knows exactly how to play this without being offensive, or at least overtly offensive to everybody, you know? Like, I feel like this is kind of a tough thing to pull off, and she did it really well. So I would nominate this for one of her best roles.
And, you know, I'm looking at the movies that she has between now and the end, and there's a couple that I don't know, but really, outside of A Million Ways to Die in the West, which is, quote, a comedy.
Oh, God.
The dollar joke is one of my favorite jokes of the 21st century, and it just happens to be in that movie.
I don't remember that. So I'll
show
get to that.
It's a dollar. Show some respect. Take off your hat.
Oh, and then this year she did Gringo, which is a straight-up comedy, which is also kind of like an action heist, maybe sort of kidnapping. I don't know exactly what Gringo is.
It's like a medicinal marijuana, like, correct, heist comedy or something. Yep. So.
But, like, aside from those, like, she doesn't really go back to comedy, so I'm okay nominating Best Charlize role as Rita.
I don't know if we have good wardrobe for anything, but I would totally throw down wardrobe or start a category for it based on
this. Is totally her phantom thread right here.
I am going to nominate this for Most Extreme Manic Pixie Dream Girl. Oh. Because
that's
that is
good.
Absolutely what they're going for.
Mm-hmm.
Best accent / voice.
Best romance.
Oh, yeah. We will not. Best love story or worst love story?
Both?
Yeah. Both, right. Yeah.
That'd be amazing.
Have we ever nominated the same thing for two categories before, Joey? Like
that? Two opposite categories?
Yeah, two opposite categories. Of all the accents she's done, and she's done a shitload, this is one of her best, I feel. Like, this is one of the more pronounced.
Do we want to nominate one of her lines for best line?
Oof, how can you pick?
Yeah, can we narrow it down? I mean, there's a category we can nominate two things for from the same program if we needed to. I think
I'm
going to
say,
in the past.
Lucky for you, my whole face is British.
I like that one.
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Rita Corny Michael is still a thing that I say. Like, I will reference that pretty regularly. With the stupid wink and the tongue sticking out.
I like it. So that's there. I gotta nominate best song as Hot Potato.
They don't actually have, like, who sings for British Eyes Only on there. Like, is that a famous actor or singer or anything that does that little tag?
That's interesting.
Do we want to nominate any? I feel like we shouldn't, just because it doesn't seem fair to the rest of the nominees. We don't nominate any actors or actresses for best or worst non-Charlize role. It almost doesn't seem fair, because, like, we are...
David Cross, right? I mean, like, I just love everything he does, and he's just, like, this... The stuff in here is just some of the, like, the weirdest, darkest stuff that happens to Tobias with the hair plugs and everything, and how I think that is just so strange. But I believe every second of it.
Oh, sure. But I just don't know that it's fair to say, for instance, Robert De Niro in Men of Honor, for instance, that, like, he's had 20 hours to work with Tobias Funke before we even see him here, and also he doesn't, like, interact with Charlize at all, so
yeah,
we could still nominate him, but I just don't know if it's fair to the other actors in this category.
No, I mean, I don't even know if it's fair to the other actors in this show. You know, I love the mom on this show, like, she's just
Jessica
incredible
Walter.
Yeah, like, you know, I don't watch Archer, but, like, I hear that's great, and she's on that, so
I mean, she's basically the same character on that as she is sort of here. I feel like she's always sort of that, like, same kind of, like, domineering, matriarchal, cold-hearted type of woman. Like, she's found her niche and she's killing it.
Yeah, like, we didn't even mention that whole part where the one kid is working at the movie studio and they use Gammy as, like, the horror monster after she got her facelift. Was that in this thread, or did I watch? Maybe that was in an extra episode. Oh, sorry, that
was
in an extra episode.
This has the tunnel of love, indubitably.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that's right. And we've had a cauldron incident already, or something.
Yeah, we do have some Jeff Garland in these episodes. We don't have the what you're talking about.
Okay.
I will nominate best outfit / wardrobe Arrested Development. Is there anything?
Definitely.
What else? What other things have we watched, Mike, that we should nominate her for? I do want to nominate for Waking Up in Reno.
I know it's not the best movie, but Aeon Flux had some badass costumes.
Sure.
Like, she looked great in all of that.
If you had to say one nice thing about that piece of crap, I think you found it.
I found several. This isn't that episode, but I found several things to enjoy.
We are saying, though, best Charlize outfit / wardrobe, right? Like,
yeah,
not movie wide.
No, but, like, she has, like, that thing she sleeps in, which is just, like, made of beads and.
Oh, yeah, No, I agree. I'm just for the name of the category, I'm just clarifying.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, no. Right, exactly.
I hate to nominate this for anything good, but, like, should we nominate, like, The Curse of the Jade Scorpion?
I mean, she's just in, like, an evening gown, but it looked great. I was thinking just the category for more sort of obscure sort of costuming or something like that, just stuff that sticks out.
Yeah, I think that's probably fine. I mean, the only other one that would even sort of maybe come close is The Life and Death of Peter Sellers. But, like, again, that's not a move that I want to heap praise upon because, ugh.
Even that thing you do, it's just more of like a period piece. I feel like that's just kind of common for the story, whereas, like, well, the two I feel we mentioned is just sort of like unusual. Well, Aeon Flux is like just like a weird, bizarre future world with crazy clothes in the first place.
You've definitely got some high concept stuff ahead of you that can cover a lot of those categories, I imagine.
One big surprise, I think, from doing so much of Charlize's stuff is like how much sci-fi she does. Like that is like, I'm really happy about that. Like that she's into that genre and does a lot of that stuff.
Well, Mick, we are up to 33 categories in the
Watch
the Throne
Awards. Holy shit.
So we are going to this a lot. I can tell you that much.
Wait, why are we still... Wow. Why aren't you like vetoing more categories?
Because I don't like to say no.
I know. It's fine. We'll get there eventually. We'll figure something out. Maybe we'll do like a 5-hour live show.
Maybe.
You must be able to consolidate some of those. Are they all really?
Well, there's a couple that only have one. There's a couple that have none. There's a couple. Like, my whole thing with any of the award shows, like, if you ever want to do this for your Winona, is like, I don't want to have a category that, say, 80% of people are going to vote on. Like, most badass performance is probably going to be Furiosa. Like, it just, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
But we still have that as a category for now, just because. So,
yeah.
We're gonna dial it down. You know, I was realizing, you know, Mike, the last couple episodes I've been saying, you know, we're about halfway through. But I realized between like announcing the awards and like doing a clip show, not like a PSH clip show, not like a Philip Seymour Hoffman clip show like they did, but like actually watching her on SNL
Extra
or whatever,
bits.
Or you know, that thing that Chris was telling me. Like, Chris, what was that thing that you like cannot wait to talk about?
Oh, the music video for Crossfire that she's in.
There
it's
you
very
go.
Fun.
Like those kind of clip shows where like it's like the Zack Attack clip show where we watch like the little things she's been in. So between announcing the awards, that and the actual award show, you know, we're closer to 50 episodes than 40, and so we're still like we still got a lot of room to go. So we got a lot more time to nominate more crazy ass random categories and then eventually dial it back in. But I'd rather right now put the feelers out there, gather all the information that we can, and then at the end sort of go through and be like, well, you know, Best Dancing, which I love, are people going to have seen any of these movies that are nominated? And if not, maybe we don't have that as a category.
Yeah, in a perfect world, we'd be able to sort of, like, list clips and links and all that kind of thing so that they could experience it properly or, you know, provide the actual film for them. That would be amazing if we could or not, but I don't know. I also feel like the first up on the chopping block are going to be, like, supporting actors and stuff, and it's just going to be streamlined down to strictly Charlize.
We will see. We will certainly see. I mean, there's definitely other categories that we can cut out before we cut out that one. But, you know, we've got time to figure it out because we still have a lot of Watch the Throne left. The next thing we're doing is in the Valley of Elah, I think.
A Valley of Elah? Yeah, I'm not sure.
Tobin coming back for that. And then we got a Magic Mike's crossover episode in Battle in Seattle. Then a movie that I've never heard of in Sleepwalking. And then Chris is back for Hancock. We've got sort of, you know, some other weird stuff. Like, I feel like we're now kind of in the portion of her career, like, Keanu got to in the middle, where just like, what are these movies?
Yeah, I haven't seen three out of the four you just mentioned. I don't know what she did during this time either. I mean, I don't feel like she was ever out of the spotlight either. You know, like, I wasn't ever like, where are the Charlize movies? But now I turn around, I was like, what are these Charlize movies?
So what's interesting, and I'm noticing this now for the first time, is that in 2009, she does Astro Boy, which Lindsay will be back for because, you know, who else is an Astro Boy? Mr. Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
But she also does The Road, which I haven't seen, but I did read the book.
Oof, I watched that.
But then she's not in another movie for 2 years. And I think maybe she adopted a child or two. Like, I don't know. There has to be something that she happened in her life then, or maybe because, like, when you're an actress as big as she is, you know, Cage has never missed a year. Keanu maybe missed 1 year. Like, just to miss a year like that. But then she comes back in 2011 with Young Adult. And aside from one movie, The Last Face, which I don't know what that is, I haven't seen everything, but I've heard of everything. But we still have another, like, 10 or so movies to get to that point where it's just like, oh, there's a lot in here that I've straight up never heard of.
Yeah, that was the weirdest thing to me, is having thought I've seen a lot more of her movies than I have seen. There's so many out there I've never seen. I'm just like really looking forward to that side. And it's mostly here now, like the back end stuff. So
There we go. Well, thank you both for being on this podcast. Why don't you give us an elevator pitch? We'll go with Lindsay first. Give us an elevator pitch of your podcast.
I mean, it's like this. It's about Winona Ryder instead, and it goes exactly chronologically through her career, and it's me and Rekha Tilsaram, who we haven't really introduced this in the show, but we don't really know each other. We're just kind of Facebook friends.
I think you did mention it once in one episode recently.
You guys seem like close friends.
Well, that's
like
awesome.
Long-time friends.
I mean, we're becoming friends through this show, but I just knew that she really liked Winona Ryder, and I asked her to do a podcast with me, so here we are.
Awesome.
To be fair, Lindsay, before Mike and I did Cage Club, I mean, we were obviously, like, closer than you and Rekha were, but, like, we weren't really, like, friends.
Right, kind
like,
of
we
the
were
same
just,
situation.
Like, because we never met at school. Like, we went to the same school, we never met. I also didn't meet Chris at the same school that we all went to, but I sort of met Mike after the fact.
Yeah, we had, like, friends in common, and then...
Yeah.
Right.
Then I posted about, you know, wanting to buy every Nicolas Cage movie, and then, you know, wanting to watch them all, and then Mike was just like, I'll do it too, and then it just sort of went from there. I mean, we had talked more than you and just a random Facebook friend, but not much.
I mean, she's not a random... Yeah. I had met her in person, like, once or twice.
I'm sorry, I'm not downplaying your relationship with Rekha.
No problem.
But that's funny, because, like, yeah, I mean, specifically, I could point to one situation where, like, Joey and I were in the same room and not didn't know each other yet, and, like I videotaped a RCTV holiday special that he was on and stuff, so, like,
oh, really?
It's weird to think, yeah, I videotaped that.
Wow,
like,
okay.
That special, so it's, like, kind of weird to think that, like, before we knew each other, like, we kind of knew each other, but, yeah, there was that, like, Lost moment, I guess. From the show Lost, not like we had a Lost moment.
Okay. Well, so Chris, why don't you give us a rundown of your podcast with a co-host that you know far better than either of these pairings started out as.
So we go chronologically through the films of Stuart Townsend.
Yes.
That's not true.
It's called This is the Townsend.
Now and Again is a show about music. I think that's the only one on this network. That isn't super about films. We're the weirdo show in so many ways.
But I do want to say that your existence has opened up the door into, like, other nostalgia-based podcasts, like Wistful Thinking. Like, Wistful Thinking is not always about movies. They also do, like, books. And I think they either did an album or, like, they want to do albums. So, like, your existence has opened the door into another sort of avenue of podcasts.
Yeah, it's extremely cool to be the Ready Player One of the Cage Club Network. I really love just being things that people remember. That makes me feel so good. We take the now that's what I call music compilation albums, and we kind of tackle them volume by volume. And what that allows us to do is...
Slowly want to kill yourself over time?
But also it allows us to not only see how pop music has evolved over the last 20 plus years, but how we have grown and how music kind of relates to the memories that we make and how we grow up weird and how music relates to that. Nico and I, we sure do have some fun over there. Come join us and listen to us gripe about, listen to us both lose our minds about how much we hate Jessica Simpson.
Yeah. I have not listened to
Ashley forever.
That is next up on my little podcast app, but that was the May 1st episode. So this episode does come out in May. So go listen to the now 17 episode of Now and Again, and maybe message Chris on Facebook and then have that screenshotted and tweeted about because nothing is private on the internet.
Nope. I pulled a real Kanye on Joey there.
But it was fine because it was a pretty okay joke. But it was also completely out of context. Like, that's not what I was saying, but it also worked.
So by the time this drops, and we're doing our next episode on cover songs, so we're going away from the Now soundtrack.
Nice.
We're talking about cover songs, which allow us to go in depth about that incredible cover of Earth, Wind, and Fire that Taylor Swift just dropped. So if you want to, again,
oh, September.
Yeah, so if you want to hear, you know, some people lose their minds about pop music, but also maybe praise some other pop music, we're the show for you to listen to.
Also, if you want to hear Chris really lose his mind about a cover song, go listen to Now 16 Side B.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Hoo boy. That was a
It's not
one.
Supposed to be a bad music podcast, but, you know,
it sure as shit turned into one.
You know, we are in the dredges of the mid-2000s where all culture was kind of terrible, so.
Yeah. Well, thank you both for being on this episode. We look forward to having both of you back for all things Watch a Throne and also their podcast and also every other podcast on the network, including the newest podcast. We have Brian Rodriguez, who is on both Woody Allen episodes. He's got his own podcast now that P.S. I Love Hoffman has ended. Go check out High School Slumber Party every Friday, the same days that this show comes out. there will be a new high school slumber party. I have not been a guest yet. I am very put off by the fact that he has not asked me to be a guest. But I feel like Mike is probably on either the first episode or a couple of early episodes, right? So, you know, it's a
I've
podcast.
I've recorded one.
You're only on one?
I've so far recorded one, signed up for a couple.
What is he doing over there? Like, disrespectful to both of us. But
I mean,
he's going through the different high school, like, movies that take place or surround high school. So there's a lot of different diversity there that can go on forever. So instead of following through chronologically an actor's career like they did with Philip Seymour Hoffman, or we're doing with Charlize, or Lindsay and Rekha are doing with Winona, he is just doing all different high school movies, old and new, all different genres, all different styles. So go check that out every Friday, High School Slumber Party. If you go to cageclub.me, at the top of the page, click the shows link, you can see all of the different shows, including Chris's podcast, Lindsay's podcast, all of mine and Mike's, and also High School Slumber Party, and everything else we've got. So cageclub.me, facebook.com/cageclub, at cageclubpod on Twitter. All the shows, everything you need to know. I'm Joey Lewandowski.
And I'm Mike Manzi.
And that was Chris Mattiello and Lindsay Gibb, and we'll see you next time on Watch the Throne.
And so George Michael drove Rita to Wee Britain.
It's nice to be with someone young. We can listen to young people's music for a change.
Great, yeah, please.
That's when he first grew concerned.